let us come back from Sydney and just going for a walk. Now, the temple I go to in Sydney is just in Haymarket, so just very close to the Circular Quay, if anyone knows. So just walking past the entertainment centre just a couple of nights ago, Sydney Entertainment Centre, saw these kids camped out. It's early in the morning, and they're waiting for a concert that evening. It's amazing just how people would just sit outside waiting for these concerts. But one day, I'm going to come here early on a Friday morning and see people camped outside waiting for Ajahn Brahm. One of these days. Anyhow, I'll get my dreams and fantasies out of the way, because tonight, another request for the talk this evening, and the request this evening was on skillful speech. Because you know, we can do so much damage with our mouth. People think that you can sort of kill somebody with your hands or kick them, but you can do far more damage with your mouth. That's the most dangerous, the dangerous weapon we have is our mouth. And you've got to be very careful, because young people, they've got very strong arms and legs. But as you all know, that's something which I've noticed, because I've been in this business a long time. When you get old, your eyes are not as good as they used to be. You have to wear glasses. When you get old, your ears are no good. You know, you have to shout or wear a hearing aid. When you get old, your arms, they can't hold things as strongly as you used to. When you get old, even your legs are weak and they can't run or climb stairs as they used to. All parts of your body as you get old get weaker and weaker and weaker, except one. You all know this, don't you? You've heard it before, but it's very true. That part of your body which gets stronger with age is your mouth. Old people can really talk. Which is why this talk this evening is especially for the elderly who talks too much. And the young people as well, because you may not talk so much, but you're not skillful in the way you use your words. Because that can create so much difficult karma for ourselves. We don't know how to talk properly. And you know, you've got to live with a person. And when you live with other people, you've got to know how to talk to them in a way that you can get what you want. Skillful speech to create harmony and peace in your life. But also to get things done if there's some problems which need to be fixed up. So skillful speech, this is actually at the heart of Buddhism. For those of you who know your basic Buddhism, Buddha taught Eightfold Path. The Eightfold Path, eight things for enlightenment. And one of those is skillful speech. So it's such an important part of our life, especially our spiritual life, that we should always be very careful of how we use our mouth. And of course the first thing is not to talk too much. People talk far too much. And the first story is a story from an old text called the Dhammapada Commentary, which I adapted for the book Opening the Door of Your Heart. It's very rare I tell this story. And that's the story of the politician. You know how much politicians speak, and actually met with Minister of Immigration this afternoon, but he's a nice guy. I've got to say this in public because I want him to do something for our visas. So that's the first skillful speech. Always speak nice things about people in power. Always suck up to the boss in your office, and you always do well in life. But this minister, he was one of these people who would never shut up. As soon as they started discussing something, he would get up and he'd go on and on and on and on and on. And no one could get a word in edgewise. And you may know people like that, either in your work or in your home. People could just not shut up. So in those days, you know, the government was run by a king. So the king was like the prime minister or the president. And he was at his wit's end trying to shut up this minister. And after one of these sessions, you get nothing done because this guy goes on and on and on, thinks he knows everything. So he just went out for a walk in his garden. And in the public part of his garden, he saw a group of kids who were laughing and clapping. So he went to investigate. And there he saw there was a disabled man in a wheelchair. And the kids were giving him money. And what he was doing was the kids would point to a bush or a tree. And this guy had this old toy called a pea shooter. I had a pea shooter when I was a kid. It was like a tube and you put little peas in it and you blow them. You know, just usually the kids you didn't like to sort of, you know, it's only a little sting, it didn't really hurt. I got enough peas blown at me. It was just like a little game that kids would play. But this guy, he was so skilled. Now, when you're disabled in one area, you build up your skills in the other area. They would point to a tree and say, chicken. And with his pea shooter, and every pea would take off a leaf. And this is the way he would sculpt trees into like a chicken or like an elephant. Now, you've been to these gardens where people actually shape trees. They sculpt trees into all these beautiful animals. And he would do this with a pea shooter. And the kids were just so impressed by this, they give him a few coins here, a few coins there, and that's how he actually got by in life, by sculpting trees with a pea shooter. He was disabled, that's the only job he could do. And when the king saw this, he said he had an idea, he had an insight. So he went up to this disabled man with a pea shooter, and he whispered the words, "I can make you richer than your wildest dreams. All you need to do is to help me." He whispered to the disabled man, "Pss, pss, 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 pss." And the disabled man, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." And the following day at the court, at the parliament, the king started to discuss something. And as soon as the king opened his mouth, this minister started saying, "Well, in my opinion, and I'm always right, because I'm very wise, and I've got so much experience, and I've been here a long time, and you should listen to me, and this is how we should do it, and we should do it this way and not that way, and don't listen to these other guys, I don't know what they're talking about," and he kept going on like this. But as soon as he opened his mouth, he felt something go into his mouth. He never noticed that in this great hall, there was a new curtain on the wall. And he didn't know what was behind that curtain. And of course, you all know what was behind that curtain. But, you know, just a little thing entering his mouth, that never stopped him. He kept on talking and talking. But every now and again, something right in the back of his palate, and of course, what do you do? Well, he swallowed it down and carried on talking. And he kept on talking. And the longer he kept on talking, the more he began to feel a little bit queasy. Because he didn't realize what was actually hitting his throat and going down into his stomach. But he kept on talking and talking and talking until he felt really sick. Now some of these people, they're so full of what they want to say. Even when they're about to throw up, they keep on talking. And it was only he was turning green and he couldn't actually do it anymore. He couldn't talk anymore. And he ran out from the hall, totally green, holding his hand over his mouth, in case something very awful came out. And when he left, the king burst out laughing. And no one knew why or what had happened. And then he went over to the curtain, he opened the curtain. There's a disabled man with his pea shooter. And about most of his bag of ammunition was empty. And the king held up the ammunition. It wasn't peas, it was chicken shit. Little pellets. And for the last 15 or 20 minutes or half an hour, with deadly accuracy, this guy with the pea shooter had emptied half a bag of chicken shit down his minister's gullet. And apparently it worked a treat. That minister was absent for quite a few days. And they got a lot of work done when this guy wasn't interrupting all the time. And when he actually got better and he came back, it was amazing, just, he would hardly speak at all, and when he did speak, he'd always put his hand over his mouth just in case. And that's the story, I've told it almost directly as the Buddha told it in one of these stories. So you can know, people say just religious leaders have a sense of humour, and I thought that was a very funny story. Yeah, they do have a sense of humour, but also has a meaning to it. So look, if you've got a person in your office who talks too much, I'm sure we could hire somebody. So when you talk too much, you create a lot of problems for other people. And as a Buddhist, I know that, and I was told this, you know, because now I signed a form today for joining up, and I gave my full title when I signed the book, and I think I told you the correct title to address me by, you know, His Emptiness, Ajahn Brahm. So I signed His Emptiness, and the vice president said, "Yes, Ajahn Brahm, you remember you telling me that it's the empty things which make all the noise," which is true. You get like a drum. It's empty inside, and you bang it and it makes this big noise. But if you had like a solid piece of wood, it doesn't make so much noise. And actually, that's why the Buddha said this. It's the empty things talk too much. And it's the small rivers, the small streams, like in the mountains. They're the ones who make all the noise, the babbling brooks. The big rivers flow silently. So you, are you a babbling brook? Or are you a great river flowing majestically and silently through your life? And of course, most of us are small babbling streams. Now don't criticize me, because I've got to speak today. Now, this is what I'm here for. I'm just doing my job. Okay, that's why I speak now. But a lot of times you don't need to speak. So that's why we learn how to be quiet. So the first thing about skillful speech is speak less. And when you speak less, you're listening more. And when you're listening more, that's where you become wise. A lot of times people just don't communicate. They know how to speak, but how many people know how to listen? And this is why people who are quiet, they really become very wise, because they're gathering all the information. They're beginning to learn about you and the people surrounding you and everything else about life. So in silence is where we're learning and becoming wiser. So always be careful of the silent ones. They're like the private investigators. They're gathering information. They're like the Secret Service. You think they're not doing anything, but they're gathering and gathering and gathering. So be careful of the silent ones. They're the great rivers. They're the solid things which are getting more and more wise. So when we talk too much, we lose it too often. And also, the more you speak, the more chance of putting your foot in the mouth. The longer it's open, the more chance it is to go in there. That's why you have to be very careful. It's just the law of averages. The more you speak, the more you're going to say something stupid. So that's why I have to be careful. That's why these talks are edited. Just in case you say something wrong. So, gotta be very careful not to speak too much and to do more listening. And that's where you can communicate. Standard story, which I say in most meditation retreats, that once in Bodhinyana Monastery, many years ago, I was walking past the kitchen just before lunch. And I was very happy to see someone cooking inside there. Not one person, but six people were cooking. It just happened that day, there were Thai people bringing our food today, and they were all busy cooking. What a wonderful thing that is. They're making good merit, and they're serving, and making good, calm, beautiful, delicious food. But as they were talking, as they were cooking, when I looked in the window, I saw that every one of those women, every one of them had their mouth open talking. And there were only six people in there. And I thought, if six people are doing the talking, how many people are doing the listening? And the answer was, no one was doing the listening. Everyone was doing the talking. What a waste of time that talking was. But if you're going to talk, you had to have someone listening, otherwise it's a complete waste of time. So remember, the next time you open your mouth, make sure there's someone there with an ear which isn't blocked, so they can do some listening. Otherwise it's a waste of time talking. And that's one of the reasons why in the old Buddha sutras, sometimes people would ask a question to Buddha, but the Buddha would remain silent. He wouldn't answer it. Not because he didn't know the answer, but because the other person wasn't listening, or wasn't going to listen. So it's a great way, when you're silent, somebody says something to you, and you're quiet. When you do that, you know the power of silence. This is not just a power which you can listen, but it's also a power where the other person can listen to silence. I mentioned this a few months ago, and it's a great technique for you to use when another person scolds you and they get angry at you, which happens in life. Not everybody comes to Nolamara Center on a Friday night. Not everybody is very kind and peaceful and mindful when you speak. All those other JoJos out there, they just sometimes can scold you. Of course, you don't scold anybody, do you? But if you get scolded and people start shouting at you and abusing you and cursing you, what a great thing to do is when they're finished, be quiet. And do the pause for maybe 10 or 20 seconds after you've been scolded. And the reason you do this is to give that person who's been angry at you these beautiful 20 seconds so they can reflect on what they've just said. If you're talking back to them, they're listening to your words, and they have no chance to contemplate what they've said and how they said it. It's a very powerful technique, the 20-second pause after someone has spoken improperly. You don't need to correct them. You just need to give them the space so they can hear what they've just said and realize how stupid they've been. The power of that silence. And it's not only that, but when you give yourself moments of silence, and you can listen to how other people speak. I was trained as a monk to be so silent, to sit there, especially when I was a second monk. Now you see this monk sitting next to me here, Ekagata. Very good monk, very wise, but he's not allowed to speak when I'm speaking. Even if he knows I made a mistake or tries to correct me, you're not allowed to speak. And that's how I was trained. And when I first came to Australia, I was again number two monk. The monk in front of me, Ajahn Chakra, he would give all the talks. And Dennis remembers that when I first came here, he would give all these talks. And I'd just sit there and sit there and sit there. And after about 5 or 6 months of being here in Perth, he went off to Thailand to go and visit Ajahn Chah's monastery just for 3 or 4 weeks, a bit of R&R, and also back to the home base to check in with the boss. And while he was away, I had to give a talk. And somebody came up after I gave my first talk, and they told me, he said, "That was amazing. I never thought you could talk. I thought you were mentally impaired." He said that. Because they'd never seen anyone actually sit silent for so long. The power of silence can be misinterpreted sometimes. But it's not meaning the monk sitting next to me is not mentally impaired. You can talk to him afterwards. You see that even though he's so silent, beautiful. He's pausing to let me reflect on what I've just said. So this is actually how you can control your speech. So to pause something, it's just a hard thing to do, isn't it? Because someone just said, you just really want to get in there and put them right. So number one, remember the power of silence. We all talk too much. And just restraining a little bit, letting the other person hear. And also you hear more. And if someone is talking to you, when you've trained in a bit of silence, you can listen so much more deeply. That's one of the reasons why monks and nuns, people who've been trained in meditation, trained in silence. What is silence anyway? It's mindfulness. You're aware. You're aware of what's happening rather than aware of your mouth and what you're saying. And if you can do that, It's amazing just how much you can be sensitive to the people around you and the situation. In silence, we can have this great quality called mindfulness. Very strong awareness and sensitivity. And that's why if people could learn a little bit more silence in their life, their relationships would be better, their health would be better, and their business success would be better. Simply because you're more sensitive, first of all, to the people you live with. When you're silent, you can actually, when you actually meet your partner, when you're silent inside and outside, you're not talking, you can actually feel just how they are, whether they're tired, whether they're happy, whether they're miserable or whatever. And how often is it you put your foot in the mouth by saying something that's a totally inappropriate thing to say? And the reason is because one isn't listening. How often is it that you're with sort of a client or with your boss and you stuff it up? Simply because you're not sensitive to what needs to be done at that time and place. How often is it that you get the sicknesses because you're talking so much you don't even listen to your body, what your body says it needs? That's why the silence, when you don't talk too much, you listen more, you feel more, you're more mindful, and you find you get a much better understanding and sensitivity to life and to the people around you, which means you don't have so many problems in life. But you have to speak from time to time, so how do you speak? And again, instead of just opening your mouth and the first thing which comes up to your mind, you start saying, you learn how to train your speech. When I have to give talks, when I have to go into difficult situations, when I have to be in very sensitive situations, you know, such as a person who wants counseling because about to commit suicide, how do you do that? You don't plan what you're going to speak about. You just put these beautiful things like loving kindness, lack of fear, compassion into your mind before you start speaking. That's what we mean by not just think before you speak, establish kindness before you speak. And if you can do something like that, that you know what comes out of your mind will be kind, will be worthwhile, and people love kindness. It's amazing just what you can get out of life by just being kind to the people around you. You can actually squeeze so much out of people when you're kind to them. So, you know, use kindness like this, use compassion, but it's a good thing to do anyway. But look, some of the examples which I've had, you know, in the life of a monk over here, because imagine, was it 25, 26 years ago when we first came, we had absolutely nothing, we had a small house in North Perth. I remember after 1 month looking at the accounts from the committee meeting, the house was worth $50,000 and we owed $49,000, that's all we had in the bank. So we started from, you know, just hardly anything at all, and an equity of $1,000 26 years ago. Now we've got these huge monasteries, new retreat center, and I'd actually, as a monk, you sort of get people to make donations. You're kind to them. You soften them up. You know, that's how we do it. Soften you up. You're just such nice people. You just, it's wonderful that you come here every Friday and you feed the monks. Oh, you're just such wonderful people. And of course, you know what it's like. When people are kind to you, you want to be kind back. Because what happens when you establish kindness, first of all, you're actually opening up communications. If someone is cruel to you, if they put you down, if they criticize you, what happens? Barrier goes up, a wall comes down, doors get closed. You don't want to listen anymore. It's human nature. If you scold somebody, they're just going to resist. They don't even want to listen to you. And this is why people just do not know how to communicate. With kindness, with care, people want to listen. They realize that they're being valued, they're being respected, and therefore you can communicate. So when you do start speaking to anybody, even in a difficult situation, you put kindness in your mind before you open your mouth. Now look, I've been doing that for so many years, and you get into difficult situations, you know, situations you've never been in before. you know, what was it, 8-9 days ago, sort of giving a talk in the Chinese Chamber of Commerce to all these big shots. And you know, sometimes you get these tricky questions. I think one of those tricky questions someone asked was, you know, in Christianity, they've got this saying that it's harder for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to go to heaven. Please comment about that, Ajahn Brahm. And so, you know, I didn't actually say this, but I thought about it. I should have said, sort of, well, you know, don't be a Christian, be a Buddhist. We don't have that saying. You know, Buddhists said we're so compassionate, we accept anybody. I'm sure that these days, anyway, you know, with a few dollars here, you can always bribe your way in. But no, it's just, you know, when you're kind, you know, you realize that there's a person, they've been working hard all their life and they made it into a few dollars, and what's wrong with doing that? And I told them the answer is, and when you're sort of given these questions you never answered before, just with kindness, you're sort of a good person. It's not the money, whether you've got heaps or whether you've got little, it's how you use it. This is like just classic Buddhist teachings. And so sometimes, if you make your mind kind and caring, you see these teachings, and you check up afterwards, and yeah, that's what the Buddha said. So it's not whether you're wealthy or whether you're poor or how much you have, it's how much you use. Well, sorry, how you use it. That depends whether you get happiness and you go to a heaven realm in this life or another life. So that idea of, you know, like a camel, you know, going through an eye of a needle, it depends how, like, dexterous camels are, whether they've done yoga before, they can bend this way and bend that way. And if they've, you know, uses their wealth wisely, then they don't get through anything. So I just, well, you're poor. It doesn't matter if you're poor, just how you use that poverty. I mean, look at me. One of the reasons we saw the minister this afternoon, because part of the thing with visas, you know, you need like a minimum salary level. And that is a real big bummer for monks, because our minimum salary level is zero. And they say, no, you know, you can't get into Australia because the Buddhist Society of West Australia will be exploiting you. You've got to pay you a proper wage. So you've got to get the idea about vows of poverty. And, you know, we are poor monks. You know, when you actually add up, you know, how much it costs to look after a monk. This was done some time ago, you know, by the English Sangha Trust, who were looking at, you know, monks and nuns in England, similar to over here, same tradition, Ajahn Chah tradition. How much does it cost, you know, you guys to look after me? And they worked out it is actually cheaper. It's cheaper to look after one monk or one nun than it is to look after a dog. It's true. So the consequence of that is every home should have one. Now they're nice and fluffy and cuddly. You just, you know, make a little hut in your backyard and they can sit in there and meditate all day. And when you want to play with them, bring them out, ask any questions. Just all they need, a bowl of food once a day, put it out there. And we always wag our tails. It's always nice. So how much it costs to look after a monk or nun? It's more expensive to get a dog or a cat. So anyway, that's what how much it costs. So it doesn't matter if you're wealthy or if you're poor. It's just actually how you use that. And of course, we use our poverty in a very happy way. We're just happy to be poor. You're happy to be wealthy. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. But the point is that when the questions like that are asked you, before you speak, just put kindness in there. You respect these people. You respect everybody. And that's actually, I mentioned this before, every time, you know, when I went into prisons, first of all, I met these murderers and rapists and all these other people. Now, you put kindness in front of you before you spoke, and it's amazing just the relationship you had with these people who were very scared and very violent. But when you put kindness, you know, in your mind before you thought even spoke, what are these beautiful words come out? A lot of people in those jails, they put fear. You know, this is some murder. They could rape you. They could kill you right there. These were the experts in such things. The professional killers. And they could knock you off so easily. That's why I remember that time when I went into the old Canning Vale jail. It's Acacia, is it called now? I don't know, anyway. One in Hakea. Okay. They keep changing the names, you know, to protect the innocent, whatever it's called, I don't know. But anyway, the old jail there. And that was a time they were having a lot of violence towards visitors like me. And so as I checked in at the gate, and I was going to teach a meditation class, the prison officers gave me a pen, like a little biro pen. And they told me, he said, "This is our new security device. Over the past month, we've had many people attacked, raped. Not just girls, boys as well. People like you. You know, with your robes, you know, it's much quicker than if you've got trousers." It's dangerous wearing robes. So, this is a security pen. You will notice, they said, on the ceilings throughout this prison, we've installed what we told the prisoners were smoke alarms. They look just like smoke alarms, but they aren't smoke alarms. They're security alarms. If you get attacked, just with that pen, it's got a sort of a ink thing in the bottom, but if you press that pen and point it to one of those smoke alarms, the alarm will go off in our control. We'll be able to know exactly where you are. We'll come and sort of save you. He said, "Put it in your pocket." And I said, "Pardon?" "Put it in your pocket." He said, "Look at me, you haven't got any pockets." So I said, "Just hold it." And he said, "Most important thing, don't tell the prisoners. This is top secret. If they find out, now they'll grab your pen and then rape you." So this was actually, you know, I'm making a bit of fun of it. This was actually serious business because many people had been assaulted. So I went into my meditation class, and one of these prisoners, he was a great guy, and he was really the big guy, and he was one of the leaders of one of the gangs in the jail, but he was a really nice guy in the end and did great meditation. We really got on well together. And this guy, he came up to me and said, "You've got one of those security pens as well." And of course, you know, these guys find out, they're not idiots. And then he looked at me seriously, you know, with a very serious face, and said, "Ajahn Brahm, do you really think you could even press the top of that button before I raped you?" And I looked at him and said, "Probably not." He said, no way. We're so quick in this jail." But I wasn't worried. Because then he looked at me and smiled. He said, "But Ajahn Brahm, if any of these guys try that, I'll jump on them first." He said, "We like you. You're safe." That was my security in the jail. And that was actually meant a lot to me. It was a kindness meant that I didn't need any security pens. They would help me because I'd help them. So that just a little bit of kindness. And because of the kindness, you put that there first of all. You weren't talking to these people with fear. You're not talking down to people. You're actually talking to them as friends. I really respected them. You put kindness and you can respect anybody. Because you respect them. This is the other thing which I found. I'm going off the track now. Because I respected those murderers, those rapists, those thieves. They could actually see something in themselves to respect. I could see it. So they looked to what I could see. That's okay. And when these things happen, come on guys, someone just falls over, they fall up again. It's just what goes up goes down. You know, just the anicca of life. Anyway, when sort of you respect someone like that, when you see something good in someone else, they see it themselves. And actually that's why they respected me and they loved me, because I showed them something to love in themselves. And that was actually why just about all those prisoners who came to my class never went back to jihad again. They became rehabilitated. Because of kindness, before I spoke, I could establish that beautiful relationship and they could see the kindness, the good in themselves. And then sort of they were free from the reasons why they did those crimes in the first place. So they can go back in society and just live a useful life rather than staying all the time in jail. So anyway, these are just ideas that before you actually speak, be kind. You know, to your husband, to your wife, for goodness sake. Now, how many times relationships don't last in our modern society? And you don't have to have a marriage counselor, just learn how to speak to each other with kindness, first of all. Just that much would sort of, I mean, divorce lawyers would be out of a job, and they'd all close down and do some other business like environmental law or sort of refugee law or whatever instead of divorce law. I just actually today just went past a family court. I couldn't believe just how big it is. Why is a family court in Western Australia so big? Must do a lot of business inside there. Wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to turn that into something else? Like, you know, a meditation center or something. So because all the people, they don't need to get divorced anymore because they can actually talk kindly to each other. So when we're actually speaking, number one, be kind. And this is one of the reflections the Buddha said, before you talk, make sure you're kind. Number two, make sure you use the right time and place. So if you're going to talk to another, check them out first of all. And are they tired? And are they negative? Do they want to spend a bit of time by themselves first of all? And I teach this to all my monks in Bodhinyana Monastery. Look, if you want to ask me something, and you want to ask me, now, can I go visit my brother in the United States? Because Kakadu has just come back from the United States. You know, can I sort of, you know, have a new mattress for my hut? You know, can I sort of go and visit my mum for the weekend? I say, look, if you ask me that question when I've just come back from a busy weekend in Nollamara, of course I'm going to say no. You wait until I've had a good meal. And you can actually see just how much I eat. And then after the meal, we only eat the one meal a day, after the meal, then you ask me. And of course, you know, when you're happy, had a good meal, had a nice cup of tea, and of course you say, oh yeah, for sure. It's obvious. That's why, if you want anything from your partner, instead of just asking them, take them out for a meal first of all. Go to their favorite restaurant. And then when it comes to the last course, then hit them. Don't say yes to anything. They've so softened up by that time. It's amazing just how people don't do these simple things. And they just blurt it out at the right, wrong time, the wrong place, and of course you get all this negativity. So remember how you feel. Sometimes that you're in a bad mood, it's part of life. You're tired, had a sort of a late night, busy time at work, or you don't feel well physically, and if people ask you something, that's the time to be quiet. And then sort of when they are in a good mood, then you can ask them, you get much more sense out of people in a good mood. And the other thing, when you're being kind, you always like praise people. And this is one of those unskillful speech which you see so often in a country like Australia. Just how people just put each other down. And you've seen this in sometimes marriages. There's the old story in the first year of marriage. In the first year of marriage, the husband listens as the wife speaks. In the second year of marriage, the wife listens as the husband speaks. In the third year of marriage, the neighbors listen. Both of them argue. Why does it happen that way? Is this because people are stupid? That's why. So look, we can listen to each other and so speak kindly. And one of the things we always want to hear from kindness is being respected. In other words, praise. Praise gets you a long, long way. Even gets you a long way economically. One of the stories in Open the Door of Your Heart, when we just started out building Bodhinyana Monastery, the first year, you all know the story of the brick wall, but I didn't just lay bricks. I did the plumbing on our toilet block, the very first building. I did all the, because we couldn't afford a plumber. They cost a fortune, plumbers. So I had to learn how to do the plumbing. So how can you learn plumbing? I went to the shop. It was Galvin's. I don't mind giving an advertisement for Galvin's because they were really a good shop. And they have put the plans on the table and basically I said, help. And of course, you know, it's a reasonable sized building and there's, you know, quite a, a few pipes and fittings. So it's actually worth the salesperson's time. You know, looking at it and saying, so you need one of these, you need one of those, and getting all the parts and just showing how to glue it together. It's quite simple. But, you know, just all you need is 5 minutes to show, you know, you put the glue around this way, just twist it around so the glue spreads, hold it together for, you know, 10 to 15 seconds, and then you can leave it. And, you know, use a sort of a spirit level to make sure you get just the right drop, 1 in 40, which is about, you know, a third of a bubble on a spirit level. They gave me all these beautiful tips. So I took all the stuff back to monastery. And took a few days, you know, didn't have to do it fast, and took my time and got it all done. And of course, if it's plumbing, like sewage, you have to get it checked by the health inspector. So the health inspector came, checked it all out, and it worked. I was really sort of, although I'd say flush with success, as somebody said, for sewage pipes. And I was so happy. And that same day, the bill came. And, you know, I don't know, a couple of $1,000 in those days, you know, quite a lot of money. So I got the check from the treasurer, and, you know, I sent it off to the plumbing department because I knew, so I was the one who ordered it all, so I could check the bill, make sure it was correct, send it off. And instead of just sending off the check, I wrote a little letter. It only took me 10 minutes, saying, like, thank you. The guy's salesperson was called Fred. Thank you to Fred behind the counter, you know, at Osborne Park Galvin's, because he really helped me sort of with this plumbing job. You know, without his help, we'd have had to get a plumber, it'd cost a fortune, and we're just a charity, just starting off. We really needed this, so thanks so much. And today it was passed. I feel so happy. Thank you so much. And here's a check. And because first year doing this sort of stuff, I thought it would just go to the shop. I never realized that Galvin's is a huge company. So the letter went to the accounts department. And so some little clerk in the accounts department, I got this later on, the story, they opened this, and I thought, oh my God, a letter. What have we done wrong this time? Because apparently the only time you write letters to companies is to complain about bad service, faulty pipes, sort of, you know, too much money or whatever it is. Hardly anybody writes a letter to say thank you. And so the little clerk in the accounts department took it straight to the head of the accounts. And they were just so surprised at getting a letter like this, they took it to the managing director. And the managing director read that letter, and he picked up the telephone and called Osborne Park office. Can I speak to Fred? And so Fred got this call from the managing director. And the managing director apparently said, well done, Fred. That's the sort of attitude I want in this company. You know, sort of customer relations. I don't know what you've done, but you really did a really good job, Fred. And said, thank you, sir. And by the way, Fred, you know, what salary are you on? Oh, well, it can always be improved, sir, or something like that. And as it happened, there was one other part, you know, for the, I think, the water supply, not the wastewater, which was actually too small, got the wrong part. And I went into that shop about an hour or two after Fred had got this call from the managing director. And there were two big plumbers in front of me in the queue. And these big, big guys, you know what plumbers are like, you know, with sort of shoulders as wide as septic tanks. And as soon as Fred saw me, he said, Brahm, come over here. And so these two plumbers, I mean, they were a bit upset. They were waiting in queue, but I got the first service. And I just wonder what's going on. And Fred's, the person who assisted him, the other salesperson, said, you know, your wife's here. He called me his wife. I said, what do you mean? He said, because somebody just praised Fred. And he got a call about an hour ago from the managing director. And of course, he was really chuffed about getting a praise and getting a rise in salary because of my letter. And so I got the first service, and there was a big sign on there saying, customers not allowed round the back or the fitting side. I said, come round the back, bro. He said, look, I can't. I said, come round the back. What do you want? And I had this part. And he said, oh, that's too small. I said, this part over here is what you want. It was about 2 or 3 times the size. He said, oh, this is the one I want. I said, what's the difference? And he smiled at me, Brahm, for you, no difference. Because so I saved the Buddhist Society about $10 or $15 on this. And I never had to wait in queue. Got first class service. And why just for a stupid little letter of thanks? So a little bit of praise, you don't realize how powerful that is. So when you just go home tonight, just with your partner, as long as they're not in the talk tonight because they know what's going on. Go to your partner tonight and say, just look, you're just such a wonderful person. Thank you so much for being you. I just have such a happy time with you. You're such a nice person. Try it. It's amazing. Oh, really? Oh, thank you so much. You're not so bad yourself. And it feels very good. And of course, you like it, they like it. Now, importantly, your kids. Why do people say that teenagers have so much difficulty? And look, it's obvious. I was in a bus doing market research for human nature. I was actually coming back from a talk at a school, coming back here for a Friday night talk. At the time the kids were coming out of school, I always remember this, sitting in the back and listening to how kids talk to each other. And of course, this was in a bus where friends sat with friends. And you remember this from your school days. I remember from my school days. You know, that people were really sort of cruel to each other. There was two girls. You've got big nose. Yeah, you're flat-breasted. You'll never get a girlfriend. You better well marry a dog. You won't get anyone. Just people just so cruel to each other. And I remember that as a boy as well, always picking on each other. So I never saw any of these kids at school being kind to one another, even as friends, never praising one another. Especially the girls. And I realized that, yeah, that's what happens at school. You get this criticism, even from your peers. And what do you get from teachers? Unless you're sort of in the top two or three at school, you get criticism from them too. You come home, criticism from your parents. And if you put yourself in the body of a teenager and listen to what they hear so much criticism, so many put-downs, and so little praise. No wonder they hide themselves in their room. No wonder that many of them just live a cyber life. No wonder why many of them just have got low self-esteem. It's one of the toughest times of life, being an adolescent. Boys have got to be cool, they've got to be popular. Same with girls. Imagine what it feels like. There's so much pressure on you, and you get very little praise. So, if you've got kids, keep a mental note. How many times you point out their faults, and how many times you praise them, and say, what a wonderful son you are, what a great daughter you are, thank you so much. Yeah, we want you to do well at school, but you don't have to. You know, we love you, we respect you anyway. And you'll find if you praise your kids more than you're doing now, you'll find their behavior will change. Simply because we need that praise. We need to feel valued. And sometimes we don't realize what we're doing. You know, we've got the best will in the world. We want our kids to do well. We ask them, you know, work harder. But from a kid's point of view, they're just hearing, you don't understand me. And for my parents, I get this at school, I get it from the teacher. My parents, I just want to be loved. Loved for who I am. And you know that story of my father when he said his beautiful words. That was brilliant, right, speech. Son, wherever you go in your life, the door of my house will always be open to you. You know what he meant? Whatever happens to you, whatever you do, you might fail, you might do well, doesn't matter, son, I love you, the door of my heart's always open. That was such skillful speech. I realized I was wanted. I was cared for. And I did not need to prove it. Whatever I did, that man would always care for me. And speech like that was like not just praise, it was wise praise, acceptance. You know what happened to me? Just strode through A-levels, scholarship to Cambridge, did really well. That's how to get your kids doing well. Psychologically, to build up their self-esteem, their confidence. And that's also how you can have beautiful relationships with the people you love. And also with your workers. If you're I'm in a boss of a monastery, they call myself boss monk sometimes. And that's, I realised this, I've got 17 monks this range retreat in our monastery. And it is probably still one of the biggest monasteries outside of Asia in the world. When I just went to this Sangha conference, you know, all the monks and the nuns in Australia, all the different traditions, the Tibetans, the Chinese, the Thais, Burmese, Sri Lankans, the Westerners, from all the traditions, meeting together, having a conference, how we can work together for the sake of Buddhism in Australia. This is about the third, fourth year we do this. It's wonderful to see how much harmony is. And how do we build up that harmony? I was a founder of that. I got that going, the Australia Sangha Association, by just being kind to all the different traditions. Don't go off to the different traditions and say, ah, you know, you Tibetans, you know, you're not as good as us. You can't say things like that. What are they going to do? We're going to work together when you say things like that? No, you praise. I really respect sort of, you know, your great compassion, all the good work you've done. So when you're kind to people, you can work together. You can get harmony. But it needs a lot of praise, a lot of respect. People want to hear that. And of course, skillful speech. If you're going to open your mouth, say something kind. There's one person said, this is a one-liner. And these one-liners are really good. The Buddha understood about sound bites. Sometimes you don't remember all of the things which are said in a talk, but every now and again you get these sound bites, these one-liners which stick. And once they stick inside of you, you know, you've got a teaching which you can take home, you can carry out throughout your whole life. And that one-liner is, if you can't improve upon the silence, shut up. Can you improve upon the silence? If you can't, be quiet. If you can, say something kind. Just doing that much, you will have just such beautiful, happy, successful spiritual lives. You'll be just a wonderful person who never says anything bad about anybody. I remember people telling me that they had a co-worker who was like that, who would never criticize or say bad things about anybody. And that they really got upset about that. And so one day they decided to test this guy. So what do you think about Adolf Hitler? And this guy thought for a few months, this is a true story, how can you say something nice about him? And this guy said, well, he was a leader in his field. That's brilliant! You can say something nice about anybody. So when you actually learn how to say nice things about people, it creates harmony and peace. So if you are going to say something about other people, please, if you're going to gossip, don't say anything bad about other people. And that's one of the other things about wrong speech. Did you hear about that monk in the monastery next door, what he got up to? Did you hear what she got up to? Why is it that we like to have this terrible, terrible, terrible gossip? That's one of the worst speeches of all. So if you're going to say something, always say nice things about other people, or nice things about other groups, or nice things about other religions. Otherwise we have religious wars. You know, there are great Muslims who respect Buddhism and say nice things about Buddhists. There are evangelicals who say nice things about Muslims. They're the people who understand what religion is all about, how it can create peace and harmony. And I'm running out of time, and I just wanted to tell this story. I know I told this story somewhere recently, I hope it wasn't here, because this is a story about the four religious priests meeting together after a conference. And as they had like their lunch, and they had a half an hour, they were sitting on a bench together. They were old friends. And one of them said to the other three, he said, "Look, something has been on my mind a long time. And you're my friends. Even though it's hard for me to admit this, to confess this, I need to get it off my chest." He said, "I've got a problem. Gambling." He said, "Even though I'm a religious leader, even though I tell my flock that gambling sort of, you know, is a wrong thing to do," he said, "whatever lottery or horse race is on, I just have to gamble. I'm a compulsive gambler." Did any of you do the $90 million lottery? Yeah, stupid. What's the chance of winning? But if you did win, please come and see me afterwards. But I know gambling is wrong, for especially like, you know, the hardcore gambling, like, you know, on the internet, poker, on, you know, soccer or on horse racing. You lose a lot of money that way. So this one said, "Look, I'm a gambler and I just need to get this out to confess it to you." And the other three religious leaders, they were very surprised. And they said, "That's a terrible thing. A person in your position doing that, but it's great you tell us, because when you open out to other people, it's a chance for you to do something about it." So they said, "Well done." And then the second priest, he was a little bit more worried. And he said, "There's been something on my mind as well. Some terrible thing which I've been doing." He said, "That's alcohol." He said, "Actually, I'm an alcoholic." He said, "When people leave the church or the temple, I get into the whiskey, the wine, anything left over, I drink it all down. And you wouldn't want to see me sort of on a Friday evening once everybody goes home. I get drunk," he said. "I'm an alcoholic." And no one ever suspected a person in his position was an alcoholic. But at least he was confessing. And they looked at the third priest. Said, "What's your problem?" He said, "Don't ask me." He said, "Look, come on, it's good to get, you're a religious person, a spiritual person. When you acknowledge your mistakes, there can be some solution." So he took a deep breath and said, "Adultery." He said, "There's a woman in my congregation, she's got a husband, we fell in love, I'm sleeping with her." "That's disgusting, that's terrible. A person in your position as a leader, and you're doing something like that, but at least you let us know, maybe we can do something about it." And then he looked at the fourth priest. And the fourth priest looked at his watch, "It's time to go." "What do you mean it's time to go? You know, we've all let you know our problems. Now what's your problem? What's your biggest obsession and addiction? Please let us know." And he said, "Look, you don't want to know." And he said, "Why? It can't be anything worse than gambling, alcoholism, or adultery." And he said, "It is. It's much worse. Now let's go back to the conference, don't ask me." And they wouldn't let him go. They pressed and pressed on him until he admitted it. Now what do you think is worse for a priest than gambling, alcohol, and adultery? Shh, no, no, I'm not killing his parents. Much worse than that. Shh. Don't spoil my fun. Eventually, he confessed. He said, "My problem is much worse, much, much worse than being a gambler, alcoholic, and being an adulterer. My biggest problem is I'm a gossip. Whatever I hear, I have to tell everybody else." And those other three priests were not happy. So you can see how gossip is even worse than those things. So please, if you're going to talk about anybody, talk about other religions, talk about other people, talk about people on the other side of politics.
instead of talking bad things, can we talk about nice things about each other? And we create a better world. At least we can move more in that direction. More skillful speech. We've got to live in this world for a long, long time. And to solve the problems of the world, we have to work together. And why can't people work together? Because they just don't know how to speak to each other. A little bit more praise. Less criticism. More skillful speech. More gratitude. The fact that people are really trying their best. Even if they're making a fool of it. They're stuffing up. They're not cooking the cakes properly. At least they're trying. Be kind to them. That's why in monastery you see a monk doing some work. I say, you're doing a very good job. It's good that no one's here to see what you're doing. No, it's a good job and you're trying and you're doing the very, very best. And the other saying we have, which is like a blind man will be glad to see it. There's another nice saying. So well done, at least you're putting your heart into it. It does not matter. Why do we criticize people? Because we think it has to be done well. It's not the outcome, but the process which is important. It doesn't matter if it's nice cake. It doesn't matter if it's a beautiful wall. It doesn't matter if it's a really impressive monastery. It's how it's done. You're doing it well. Thank you so much for putting your heart and soul into what you're doing. Even if it's a whole mess, I don't care if it's a mess. The way you're doing it is beautiful. That's why it's so easy to praise people, because people do try hard. They do try and do their best. So even if they stuff up, don't criticize them. Don't criticize them for the outcome. Praise them for the way they've been doing it. And then we understand what right speech is. We're encouraging beautiful processes. People being kind. So this evening, if you didn't manage to do the chanting, it doesn't matter, people were trying their best. So thank you so much for trying. Yeah, it didn't work, but it was beautiful. You volunteered your time, you gave all this effort here. Thank you so much. That's right speech, because that creates a beautiful world. And again, I started off by saying that in right speech we shouldn't speak too much, and I've already gone over 5 minutes. So that's called hypocrisy, and I put my hand up, yes. But that's a talk this evening on skillful speech, and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you. Very good. And if you're going to clap, clap properly. Come on. Very good. Never do things by halves. Okay, so any questions about today's talk? Oh, that's disappointing. I thought someone's going to come up and say, Ajahn Brahm, this is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful talk. And praise me. Yeah, go on.
Can I suggest something? Perhaps you should go to Canberra and speak to those people in Parliament.
Yeah, but take away their fun. Actually, those people in Parliament, they are good people. They sometimes they argue with each other in public, but I know some of these people, they just go and have beer together or meal together afterwards. So sometimes it's just what they do. It's just, but I think the problem is it's just a habit they got into in politics instead of work. And some of it is your fault for electing such people. Okay. Yes.
Talking about teachers criticizing, maybe they need to do perhaps some meditation on the spoken truth. And my son would like to know as well why he's getting told to grow up at school.
Ah, yeah, that's the thing. He's saying that some teachers need to learn a bit more praise and your son being told he needs to grow up at school. No, if he doesn't do well, he's actually creating more work for the teachers, so more employment later on. Always look at the positive. You know that story which is in that book about when I was a school teacher? I did actually encourage my kids, and I did sort of praise them a lot. Even that kid who came bottom of the class at the end of the school year. And, you may know this as a school teacher. You give out the report cards, and in my class of 30 kids, this kid had come 30th. And when he got his report card, you could see him opening up. Oh, gee. You didn't need to be a mind reader to know, how am I going to take this back to my parents? They're going to really just go ballistic on me. And he looked so depressed. And as a Buddhist, I was obviously not a monk, I was a school teacher. You see someone suffering, you can't just leave them alone, you've got to go and help them. So I went up to this kid, maybe about 13 years of age, and I said, look, you've come 30th in this class, it's a wonderful thing you've done. And he said, you know, I told him, in Buddhism we have this idea of a bodhisattva. A bodhisattva is someone who sacrifices his own happiness and success out of concern for everybody else. Now, you have deliberately sacrificed your happiness to take the bottom position in the class so none of your friends will have to take this terrible report home to their parents. You've voluntarily taken this pain upon yourself out of your enormous compassion for all your friends. We call that the bodhisattva. You know, then you are a Buddhist. Say, in Buddhism, you will get the best prize. You know, the one who is the most humble, the most kind, you know, the most not into their self and their own ego, by sacrificing their own happiness for other people. He looked up at me as if I was crazy. And he laughed. The point was, it took away most of his pain. And said, look, next year it will be somebody else's turn to be the bodhisattva. But at least I wasn't criticizing him. Just, you know, it's not the end of the world, becoming bottom of the class. So I was actually praising him for becoming bottom. And that actually just completely sort of stopped his train of thought of negativity. So, you know, a guy like that would never commit suicide. Some kids do. And some of them wonder why. And it's quite obvious why. They get so much criticism that after a while they think they're not worth anything. And we wonder why, but just listen to how we speak. Listen, you know, when a partner says, you know, that there's no communication anymore, there's no sort of no spark in our marriage. Why? Because there's no praise. When you go out together, oh, you so look so beautiful tonight, darling. You know, you just, oh, it's so nice being with you. Words of praise. You know, it's like the food of love, not music, but praise. It's the food of compassion, of living together. So that's why we respect each other, we praise one another, we hear that, and we like being with that person. There's too many other people will criticize you. You don't need to hear that from the people you love, and the people who love you. The whole world may put you down, but people you love, just like my Father, will accept you for who you are. No criticism whatsoever. Door of my heart totally open, no matter who you are. That's the sort of stuff which moves me and will bring the world to peace. Okay, you got another 10 minutes out of me, but this evening we won't be charging you any extra.